This is Infants on Thrones, the philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Hey, what's up, listeners? My name's Tom Perry, and do you guys recall when I mentioned a while back in a previous episode about potentially having additional episodes on mixed faith marriages? Well, let's count this one in that ongoing series. Today, I'm really excited to sit down with Neil and Naomi Winters, who are living in a mixed faith marriage. They've started their own podcast called Unequally Yoked that focuses on their own experiences living in a mixed faith marriage. And I'll just go ahead and put a Tom recommendation on it. Oh, and I should mention that I'm also very thrilled to announce my co-host for this episode, my wife.
Yeah, it's my first time participating with him. The first one that I did with him was coffee. We're just actually talking over a recorder in the kitchen. We were talking about when he did his coffee with. So this is my actually first participation with other people.
Wow, I'm glad. I'm so glad that we can be part of that.
So, what do you say? Let's get after it.
Yeah. I was just going to say, well, we can do kind of a, you know, a brief introduction. I did want to get a little bit of background from both of you a little bit. And then I just mostly wanted the discussion to flow organically. But just a few questions, but mostly I just want to keep it to where if you guys feel like you wanted to say something or ask us questions or my wife questions or whatever, because I mostly just wanted it to be a free flowing kind of thing where we can share experiences and ideas and stuff like that. But I don't know, what are you guys thinking, what are you guys expecting?
I like that.
Or...
sounds good to me.
So why don't we, I don't know if you've listened to some of the other podcasts or whatever, but I'd like to do kind of a get to know you preference checklist.
Okay.
Is that cool?
Yeah.
This way, I at least for me, I feel like I can judge you guys properly.
I know what those checklists are, and some of them I don't even know some of the music groups, so we'll see how that goes.
Oh. Well, I actually, yeah, okay. Well, really? Wait, are you going to tell me you don't know who, like, the Beatles are or Nine Inch Nails?
Nine Inch Nails, I'm, keep in mind, I'm from Price.
It's all country. It's
yeah.
All he has to say is I'm from Price, and it explains it all.
You should ask him if he likes Metallica or like Garth Brooks.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
Well,
maybe
see,
a bit.
On my list, I had classical or rock, so I don't know.
All right, we'll play along and we'll see how it goes.
Okay. So let's start with you, Naomi,
okay.
And then we'll go with Neil afterwards. So music, classical or rock?
I love it both.
Both, okay. And then the second one, it's different genres, country or electronic?
What was the first one?
Country, you know, where Neil grew up?
I don't know. They're both on the same level for me, which is not,
so you like,
I don't hate
so
it,
like
but it's not super
stuff?
High. Yeah, I'm into everything except for really hardcore rock where it doesn't sound like music. It sounds like noise. So I was a music major, so I just love music.
Just not the thrashy metal. Okay, all right.
It has to sound like music. If it's not like a chord progression or, you know, then screw it.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Apple or Android?
Apple.
Okay. Let's go books. Fiction or nonfiction?
Fiction. All the way.
Fiction. Okay. Hunger Games or Harry Potter?
Oh, gosh. Harry Potter.
Okay. Food. Mexican or Italian?
Mexican.
Chinese or American?
Chinese.
And then movies. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Depends on which one it is for both of them. I'll go with Star Trek.
Star Trek. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a Trekkie. I really am. But only Next Generation.
Only Next Gen? Not the old school?
No. I get bored and I don't know. They're just weird. I can't stand the women. They're all, I don't know. They're like just accents. They're not really part of it.
Mm. Did you fall for Riker? Was he as handsome and as dreamy as they say?
No.
Oh, okay.
All right. I actually like Picard.
Picard?
Yeah, I kept trying to figure out why an old man that was bald could be handsome. I didn't understand that, but I still don't. I mean, it's not like I went, oh my gosh, he's so cute. It's not like I had the hots or anything, but he was attractive.
Maybe you're not supposed to know. Maybe that's the whole secret.
Yeah.
Okay, so as far as genres go, do you prefer action movies or drama movies?
That depends on my mood. If I want to cry, then I go drama. If I'm...
All right, well, what are you in the mood for right now? Like, if we weren't recording...
Action.
You sat down... Action?
Yeah.
Right. Fair enough.
Because I just woke up.
So that helps you get... That's like your caffeine in a movie.
Okay. Oh.
All right, Neil.
Yo.
Let's go with you, man. Classical or rock?
Classical.
Country or electronic?
Country.
Does that hold true still? Like, you a big country nut for reals?
Not as much anymore. I'm mostly into the mid-90s, late-90s country music. I went on my mission in 94, so, like, before then I was into, and then came home and it changed, and I'm not into it as much anymore.
Okay, fair enough. Apple or Android? Yeah, tech.
Apple.
Android. Apple?
Yeah. We're on an iMac right now, so.
Really? So your iPhones and Mac and all that crap, right?
Yep.
Part of the Borg.
As Utah would say, for sure.
All right, so books, fiction or nonfiction?
That really depends on my mood, but I think nonfiction most of the time.
All right. I can dig that. And Hunger Games or Harry Potter?
Harry Potter.
Food, Mexican or Italian?
Italian.
Wow. Chinese or American?
American.
Very different than your wife.
Yes. Yeah. I only get to go have Chinese with him once a year. That's my birthday. So.
Yeah, I don't... Chinese never fills me up.
That's how it's designed, I've heard.
Yeah.
That's what they put in the preservatives or whatever it is that makes you constantly hungry.
Yeah.
All right, Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars.
Oh, wow, okay. And then, obviously, do you prefer action over drama or vice versa?
Just like Naomi, it depends on my mood. I probably usually prefer drama over action, actually.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, all right.
This has been recent, though. I mean, as you've aged.
Yeah.
Matured.
The testosterone has died down.
Yeah.
You prefer to cry at movies instead of, jump off that building.
It's not necessarily cry drama, but, American Sniper, I don't know if that would fall under action or drama. Maybe it's a combination. I just like things that are more serious.
Okay. All right. You don't like the diehard kind of superficial crap?
No, not too much, no.
He wants serious storyline.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's happening to me, too, because we watched the Fast and Furious, the recent one. I think it's 7, 8.
Yeah, I haven't even seen those.
Whatever. Okay, well, I remember enjoying them before, and then we watched this one, and I... just about got up and left because the only thing that was missing seriously was like lightsabers and wizard spells. Cause that's how ridiculous it got. It's like, I mean, I get it. You know, it's full on action, cars jumping through buildings and Jason Statham showing up at every convenient time. I get it. But I mean, I do want it to be a little, just a hair believable, just a little bit.
Well, you know, I loved Breaking Bad, and Aaron Paul was probably my favorite on there, so I thought I'll watch Need for Speed, and I made it through like a half hour. It was just so dumb. I couldn't take it.
All right, fair enough. All right, so should we get real?
Yeah, let's okay, we have now started an over under pot in our podcast for how many times Naomi cries. So,
and it only counts if a tear drops, not if they're watery.
Oh, okay. This sounds like a challenge, though. It's like, can we make Naomi cry? That doesn't sound good.
Well, mind you, like, these topics that we've been talking about are things I've never heard before. Like, they're completely fresh. So,
okay,
it's crazy.
Well, let's try to keep it to where we're just focusing on, obviously, our relationships and making it work and stuff like that. And that's one of the things that I like about your guys' podcast. Okay, let me just start there. So I've listened to all the episodes that you guys have released so far.
Okay.
And I like it. And I know I've mentioned this to you, Neil, that I appreciate the openness, the honesty. You know, there's a few glimpses of your relationship that seems very open and vulnerable. So as you guys have been going throughout this process, would you say doing this is helpful or maybe hurtful, maybe some of both?
So
has it been
helpful.
Therapeutic?
So therapeutic.
Yeah, we actually approached our therapist with the idea for the podcast, and he about crawled out of his skin thinking it was a terrible idea.
Well, that was because the original idea was we would get together and totally debate certain topics.
Yeah, it's changed since
and
then.
I still have to turn down topics and say, okay, now how does that bring us closer together? But yeah, it's been so good.
Yeah, it's been so really good.
Has there been episodes where you guys turned it off and you're like, okay, what exactly did you mean by this and why did you bring this up, blah blah blah? Did it like fuel additional fire, or was it,
you know,
it more of a
honestly it No.
It's kind of like we put on our headphones and step into this Neil and Naomi world where we're very frank and very open, and then take the headphones off and we're back to who we usually are.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, we're across the table and I feel like I'm just having this conversation with my husband. And then when we're kind of done, we're like, all right, that was fun. Because it's almost like we just kind of have a topic that we're ready to talk about and that we kind of want to discuss, like we did in college. We used to just kind of deep talk about certain things and share opinions. And so then, I don't know. To me, I don't even feel like I'm really doing a podcast, except for that I know I wouldn't want to say anything to somebody. You know, you're doing it in front of people. So I'm more careful about what I say because you want to be perceived nicely. So in that way, it's been good because we're playing nice.
So you leave your jerk hat off when you record? Okay. All right.
But then we say what we need to say. And so when we walk away, we don't feel like we have to fight. It's kindly said and honest feelings and so it's done.
Yeah.
Hence the recording in the closet.
Yes.
What
yes.
Stays in the closet stays in the closet.
Yeah.
Oh.
So obviously this has been a process, and obviously, you know, for the listeners out there, you can go back and you can listen to their podcast, which is called Unequally Yoked.
Yep.
And I saw that, this was an old Bible reference. Is that where you guys pulled it from?
We live in North Carolina, so we're in the deep South where there's a lot of religious folks. And I was telling my coworker about it, who's this, you know, really, really nice born-again Christian. And she said, oh, you're unequally yoked. That's what you should call it. And so I just went, we just went with that. And I thought it fit the situation perfectly.
I didn't realize this was going to be a thing. So I'm like, yeah, call it whatever you want, hon.
That's cool. So yeah, it's unequally yoked. So it's unequally-yoked.net. Is that the website?
Yes. And then I'm also going to put up like a phantom website called unequallyyokedpodcast.com that'll redirect to the unequallyyoked.net. just so it's, I think it'll be easier to remember that way.
Yeah, because people are like, "Where there was a hyphen, right? No, underscore? No, was there a star? No, I can't remember."
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so as a little bit of background, since I know a little bit, Neil, you disaffected, was it 6 years ago?
Yeah.
Remind me?
Yeah, I stopped believing about 6 years ago and then came out to my wife officially about 3 or 4 years ago, somewhere in there.
The night before Valentine's Day, people.
Wow, was that intentionally timed or no?
No, it came out because I asked a question. I couldn't ignore what I kind of already knew.
You put me on the spot and asked me to bear my testimony to the kids about Joseph Smith.
No, you didn't really come out and say that.
Oh.
Wait, so is the question, was it really that you asked him,
please bear
your testimony? Sorry.
Do you even have a testimony? It was like right before bed.
Oh, I just...
It might have been that same day.
Yeah, I just remember we were sitting with the kids and you asked me to bear my testimony and I...
And you couldn't.
Couldn't do
and
it.
And I was just like, okay, well, he's questioning. I didn't care. I didn't think much of it, actually.
Hmm. Yeah, that's the big... That, in my memory, is a big turning point. Maybe you remember, like, later that night, which I don't remember.
Hmm.
Yeah, I cried all night.
Oh. There you go.
So, yes, I remember it well.
Well, it's funny that you say five or 6 years ago or whatever, because that seems about the same time that my disaffection happened.
Yeah, about right.
Because when everything was really hitting the fan for us is when we found out the news that you were pregnant with our youngest.
I was pregnant. She just turned 7, so that gives you a time period. I was very early pregnant, very pregnant by the time you'd said you'd about had enough.
Yeah, something like that. So maybe it's close. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was that year of that time was chaos. I mean, there was lots of not firm decisions.
No, but it was enough where you're like, okay, I have to figure some stuff out. This isn't working.
Yeah, it's kind of the roller coaster here, but
did you bless your youngest?
Yeah, I did. Well, no,
your dad did.
My dad did.
Yeah,
but I was in the circle.
Yeah, you stood in the circle.
Yeah.
So was that because you were for sure or leaning?
No, I was leaning at
that
point.
Was leaning, and his dad had been sick for like 9 months. He was in the hospital
some
of it because he had had pneumonia, and he like kind of missed a lot of the pregnancy stuff because he had been so sick. We felt this was a way to help his dad feel like bonded to this little girl that want him to feel like he had.
Yeah.
Value.
He was also he was going through some severe mental issues, some depression and stuff like that. So we were,
that was thoughtful.
It was kind of two sides to the coin there where I was like, well, let's make sure he feels included and blah, blah, blah. And, so it was special for him that way, but at the same time, it kind of got me out of that uncomfortable, like, well, not sure what I believe at this point and blah, blah, blah. So,
yeah, that's funny. 'Cause our youngest is
he's seven. So yeah, it would be right around the same time.
Yeah.
Wow. So I wonder if we were like hitting some sort of mental wavelength that was going around. What the heck was going on there?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I didn't really start questioning until after he was born, though. So, I mean, I had my suspicions.
Well, he's almost 8.
Yeah.
So in March.
So you blessed him then, right?
I blessed him and I baptized his older sister.
Older brother.
Oh, no, I didn't baptize. I baptized
the
third daughter. I didn't baptize his older brother as an unbeliever. And, you know, I didn't want to, like, share with everybody how I felt. So
you were already totally decided?
Mostly, yeah.
See, Tom actually baptized our son, and it was just shortly after that he'd finally just said, I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, so. Because I remember, well, that was 5 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was 5 years ago when he got baptized. And yeah, I remember that interview where I was sitting with the bishop and my son, and the bishop was sitting there running him through the questions. And then he turns to me and he says, so who's going to be baptizing him? And I said, well, I would like to. Will that be a problem? And he's like, well, you know, because he pretty much knew where I was. And he says, I suppose I could let this go this once.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, it took a lot of power for me to not stand up and flip the table over and say, you want to go? But and obviously during the baptism, there was other power struggles that he threw on me, but whatever. That's not a great memory of mine, but whatever.
Yeah.
Hot dog.
That's fair.
Anyway, so let's talk a little bit. Naomi, why don't you walk me through a little bit about his disaffection? Obviously, you talked a little bit about, you know, when you learned about it that day before Valentine's,
mm-hmm.
how that all went. But talk a little bit about how the process has gone from then till now. Now that you guys are doing the podcast, what have been some of the most difficult points in the journey?
Right. When he first said to me, I don't think I'm believing. I think what you'd said was, what would you say if I told you I wasn't really believing or I was questioning? And I just recently found out that at that point you had already decided you didn't believe in God.
Right.
And so I said something like, well, I don't think I could deal with somebody that didn't believe in Christ, at least, you know? And so he didn't really go into it. So that was, I'm just barely finding out that happens. So I kind of had this slow journey of him leading me to believe he was questioning up and down. And so I would have nights when it was really, really hard just because I'd get thinking about it. And then my coping strategy is just to deny, just total denial. I'm really good at it and it seems to work well. So I did a lot of that and just he was traveling so much, so it was easy. I only saw him on the weekends and he was playing the part. He was giving me blessings. He was, you know,
going to the temple.
You went to the temple. It was the whole deal. I found a coffee cup in your car. I knew you were drinking a couple times, but I just thought, oh, well, he's experimenting, you know, he's going through that. But it was a lot worse. So I think the worst night really was that night, Valentine's night. It just, I'm like, he's really done. Like I had been suspecting and then just finding out, wow, he's really done. He's not just struggling with it.
Yeah, because I had told you about the belief in God about 4 years before Valentine's night.
Well, and I would print off stuff for him to read, and I don't think you read most of it. I would just find it in a pile that you hadn't even looked at it. And so you wouldn't really talk to me about it either. It was like the subject we ignored.
It's a lot easier that way.
Yeah, which is really bad. It's not good, which is weird because we don't do that about other stuff. We talk and communicate really well, but when that came up, it was just so uncomfortable and you were so afraid that I was going to reject you. And so you deceived me.
Yeah.
You evil, wicked heathen. I'm kidding, well, by the way.
Would you have rejected him? Like if the timing was a little bit off, or you know, if he surprised you, like, hey, a beer in one hand, a cigarette in another, man, metaphor.
Yeah, anyway. Right.
Said, hey, I'm done. I mean, would the possibility of something that shocking? I don't know.
I think, honestly, if I'm going to be real honest, I think there was a chance. I do, because just because of where my brother was at in his process, he was so angry. And angry to the point where he was, you know, mean to his family and ended up with a divorce. And I had kind of watched that process and seen him with that anger, that undertone, you know. And and what it had done to him and his family. And so I had this huge fear, which is why I just kept holding on to that Neil was reading and stuff that was, he was trying to come back, you know? But I don't know. I would like to think that I'd be able to stay. But if you had like come up to me and just said, I don't believe in God, which would have been the first thing that you told me, I'm not sure.
That's what you said to me.
Yeah, and that's what I said. I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know what I would say. And I think for me, the biggest thing would have been the process of finding out what you thought was right and wrong. And I think it probably would have been good for me to talk to my mom, which she's passed away since. I think she probably would have talked me into staying. I do. I'm weathering it out. And my dad. My dad would have said, let it play.
They like me, sort of.
With conditions.
Yeah. They learned a lot watching how they handled going through things with my brother.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
They learned the first response was not good with him, so.
So why don't you explain some of your fears? Obviously you were playing double agent for a while because, you know, some of us have to do that. I'll admit I did that.
Yeah, for a while too. But, we all have a choice.
Fair enough. But, you know, it's I guess in my mind, you kind of weigh out the pros and cons, like with any decision. And then you realize, you know, I've got to work at, you know, suppressing what my inner needs are or whatever.
Yeah, well, you say what's most important to me. And for me, the answer was my family.
Exactly.
With a dose of being true to myself thrown in on the side. So in some ways, being on the road for 6 years was good because I could play both roles, if that makes sense. I could come home and read my scriptures, say prayers. We said prayers every night when I was on the road. But at the same time, live how I wanted to as a non-believer. But you know, it was a matter of me. I tried to believe, but I wanted, most of all, I wanted to keep my wife and my marriage and my family intact. So the best way that I saw of doing it was to play double agent.
Which is the rationality that any person uses to lie. They say, I don't want to hurt somebody.
I don't want to lose my family.
It will hurt them more. It will. Yeah, I don't want to pay the consequences. And so I don't tell the truth.
Well, yeah, I see what you're saying. And it's, I don't know, it's a delicate balance. I mean, like for us, when I went through my crisis and it was really, really hard on her and the kids. And one of the forms of negotiation I remember we had is that I said, I'll go back. You remember?
Yeah.
When you'd said, I can't stand going to church with the kids alone. Like something's got to give. And it was several months or whatever. And I said, well, if it means salvaging our relationship and whatever, I'll go.
Yeah.
And that was when I started going back and accepted a calling again. And you remember all that stuff?
I remember that. But the thing is, all through it all, you could see just a part of him wasn't happy anymore. He just wasn't happy with who he was and what he was doing. But at the same time, he's trying to figure out, okay, so this is what I thought I believed. This is where I'm at now. My wife believes. So how much am I willing to throw out the window, or can we still make it work? But truthfully, and it's come out now with him that I've told him that I've always known, even when we were dating and before we got married, that there was just a part of him that wasn't very comfortable with where he was at. He's trying to figure out where he stood, what his ground was on. And
What do you mean? Because
it does sound funny because
you're saying that there was a part of me that wasn't comfortable, because in my perspective, I mean, I went in waves where I was very solid in the church and my faith and blah blah blah, like big time.
Right, and you'd always ask me how do you handle when things don't fit here or here? Well, because it fits here, and he's like, no, it's either black or white. Nothing can be gray. I was like, okay, if it can't be gray, then I don't know how it fits. But for me, that's how it worked for me.
Yeah,
I had a middle line, and that's how I was able to adjust to how religion works for my life and how the LDS religion works for me. But it didn't work for him. And I honestly could see the turmoil. The black and the white doesn't work for me. I can't find the middle ground. It's either right or left. And whenever he was faced with trying to figure out how to a topic didn't fit black or white, that's what I mean by.
Right, because I'm a much more literal, much more fundamental kind of thinker.
Yep.
And that's just the way I'm wired. You know, it's not like I even had difficulty trying to understand when people would tell me that the global flood and the Noah story was metaphorical, because that still doesn't jive with me at all. It's like, well, then why is it in there? It's supposed to be some sort of bedtime story that's fictional. Like, no, because that means that anything in the Bible could be fictional. You know, that's the way my brain was, you know, it just works that way. And to be fair, I think in a lot of ways, my brain's still like that. I've tried to rewire some of it so that I could be a little more nuanced. Like my wife, where she's like, hey, you know, don't throw the baby out with all the bathwater. You know, there's good in these things, you know, and I'm just like, yeah, but if it's not true, then it's not true. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm the same way, Tom, in that, you come down to, you've been taught this your whole life and you've been taught that it's literally true. And then you start realizing that it's not true, and the black and white thinking kicks in. But you know, at the same time, in terms of black and white about what's right and wrong, with telling your spouse where you're at, I do see that it can be black and white. You either lie or you're not. But at the same time, there's a lot of external pressures pushing on you that makes the decision to be completely forthcoming a lot more difficult than just saying, you know, that dress doesn't make you look fat type thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I was saying it's one thing to... Why am I having such a hard time? It's one thing to be questioning, and you can let your spouse know, okay, I'm on a roller coaster. I'm not sure how I'm feeling at any one moment, and sometimes I am kind of leaning and sometimes I'm not, and I'm not sure how it fits into my life right now, but I'm willing to try. And that's kind of where I thought you were, Neil, for quite a while, and it sounds like you were too, Tom. And that's honest, but it's when you are totally acting like you're in, like you're believing, and you've already completely decided there's no God. There's nothing honest about that.
It's disingenuous. I can see what you're saying, Naomi. And you know, I don't like to pull from this analogy or this parallel too much for obvious reasons, but I have a friend who's gay, and a lot of times you use the parallel of someone who's gay, who's in the closet and is not coming out to their family, who for all intents and purposes are homophobic, right? So that's the reason why they stay in the closet, because they don't want to come out and say, hey, family, friends, I'm gay, and then deal with the backlash that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've talked to my friend about this, about the parallels of coming out as an apostate, as referred to coming out as someone who's gay. You still deal with those same sort of repercussions. Like, you know, my immediate family, my parents especially, when I first originally came out to them, it was extremely hard and very, very difficult for them to accept. And so I had to do a certain amount of backpedaling just to salvage the friendship, mm-hmm, or the relationship that I had with them. And early on in our relationship, I had to do that too, where I'd be like, okay, you know, I can't say for certain on some things where I stand. And that's true. You know, I don't know if you know, what, how I define God or whatever, but I can say that the church to me is not what it claims to be.
Right.
And that's kind of the ground that I stood on, but it's still incredibly difficult for my family to fully accept that, because in a lot of ways, my dad, for how important the church is for him, it would be much easier for me to come out as gay, I think. It would be much easier, because to him, it's like I'm cutting those eternal things. You know, it's like, yeah. Oh, so you're telling me that, you know, you're not going to be my son in
intentionally.
Eternity.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's jarring big
time. And we've talked about trying to expand with even my own family to let my own parents know, because we've dropped hints subtly to them. But when my dad does the the world is coming to an end approach.
Yeah.
I have all these daughters and all of their husbands don't have anything to do with church and they're all going away. I failed as a dad. And
yeah.
And I always go back. I'm like, Dad, you taught us what was right and wrong. We're grown-ups. We make our own decisions. Yeah, but I'm going to be eternally damned because none of your spouses are good. Or anyways.
Wow.
But my dad really likes my husband. So we're just
going to
we'll just tread this line very thinly.
Well, and then when I had that sit down with him, and he was, quote, resolving my concerns. That was the approach that he was taking. And I kept saying, no, I've gone down this road. I've gone down these logistic loopholes that you're trying to break down on me, you know, trying to bring apologetics or smokescreen stuff at me. And I kept trying to tell him, no, I know what I'm talking about. I do know in my mind that, you know, this research or this evidence took me to this place. You can't exactly pull me away from that. You can tell me these things that you think you know, but, you know, and I don't want to sound like I'm slandering your dad, but he was coming at me with evidence that was erroneous. It was garbage.
Right. Well, and the hard thing is that he didn't know that you had gone through that process. So
true.
By the time you already tell him, it's, you've already done all of those things, and they're like, oh, I guess it's time to go through this process with them.
Yeah, and to be fair, he doesn't want to really accept where I'm at.
Right.
He doesn't want to accept, you know, that some of the other brother-in-laws in the family are where they're at, because they don't believe. It's just, I guess in a way, it goes back to what you said earlier, Naomi, that, you know, living in a state of denial is much easier in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, and now I'm like, there's denial and there's hope, you know, and it's always okay to hope. And
do you still hope for me?
Yeah. Don't you hope for me?
Yeah, but I'm offended that you'd hope for me.
I mean, why would...
No, I'm not.
I think it's very unlikely. I don't see it happening. But yeah, of course I hope that.
That's fair.
It's... yeah, but I was going to go back to the homosexual thing. Like, it's one thing if you're homosexual and you're not telling your family about that. But it's also another thing if you are bringing a girlfriend home and trying to really play the part and hold up that front, you know?
Fair. Yeah.
I don't think that at all.
No. And I think your point is valid, and, you know, it's hard for me to explain why someone would really put up this pretense or this front of, oh no, look, I'm a believer. Check it out. I got my scriptures in tow. I've been, you know, shallowly praying, you know,
yeah.
It doesn't mean anything to me just because I'm putting on a show for whoever. I get what you're saying. So
was there a part of you when you did stuff like that, that kind of believed it, that you're like, well, there's still a part of me.
Yeah, I mean, I would say for a long time, I remember going to church meetings, and there was a particular stake meeting that I went to where they were reading some scriptures, and I just kept sitting there like, I don't buy it. Why am I here? I mean, because I felt like if I stood up and turned around, there'd be a sign on my back, apostate or non-believer or whatever, and everybody would see who I really was feeling like inside. And then of course I would go home and then I would, you know, pray and really do some soul searching. I'd be like, well, I got to give this another chance because this is too important. And I've believed for so long and blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of that, and I'm sure you, Neil, you understand this. It's that where you really are struggling, like, okay, I have to give this a really solid chance because it means too much to me, to my family. I've believed so long. I've invested too much, blah, blah, blah. And it's a constant struggle. I mean, if I could articulate how often and how many times I prayed and just wept saying, please help me here. Please, please help me here. I'm really, really struggling, and just came up empty.
Yeah, for me, it was, I mean, I do say that I pretty much didn't believe, but I tried and tried and tried to believe while at the same time not acting like I did when I was on the road. But I remember, you know, when I was trying to believe, there was a stake meeting where it was like an Area 70 was speaking, and he started talking about how young women should only marry returned missionaries and how that's a notch of whatever great thing to do. And that kind of started putting a nail in the coffin for me, that whole elitist attitude. But before then I tried to believe, and it just was, you almost can't choose. You try to, but you can't.
Well, and like what you said earlier, Naomi, belief is fluid. Sometimes you believe really strongly. Some days you don't believe at all. Sometimes you believe in the middle. You know, it comes and goes in waves, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes if you're on the ropes and you're just grasping at straws at this point, like, okay, I really want to believe. I want to believe, but you can just feel it like slipping through your fingers. I remember when I was going through some of the dark areas of my crisis, my wife, because we had been trying to have a child for so long, my wife had finally, was it one day you came to me and said, I don't know if I believe in God anymore. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa, that you jumped all those steps that I'm still working on. Like that, you went for the ultimate, and you said, yeah, you know, I still think the church is important, blah, blah, blah. Do you remember all that?
Oh, I do, because I was doing everything that, you know, they normally say you're supposed to, you know, pray and try going to the temple. And going to the temple, for me, has always been awkward and uncomfortable. Talk about everything that could possibly go wrong in a temple setting has happened to my husband and I individually.
It's true.
Everything you'd say, okay, if this keeps happening, it's meant that neither one of us are supposed to be here. But I was doing everything I thought I was supposed to. I was going to church and being a good mom and saying my prayers and trying to read my scriptures and holding church callings and going above and beyond. And mm-hmm. just kind of everything was like going downhill. I'm like, well, criminy, God must not exist because I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. So I just said, I don't think I can believe in God anymore.
Yeah.
I left it at that. And I said, I'm done believing in something that I can't grasp hold of anymore. And then I had a discussion with my friend, and she's like, aren't you so happy you found the answers you're looking for? You got the medical help you'd need. And if you were, because God directed you to find what you needed. And then I realized that oftentimes you don't get the answers what you need through prayers. Like they start to that warm, fuzzy feeling in your heart that it's going to tell you what you need to do. And that's going to be it. Sometimes it's just making sure you just make the right choices in your own head. So I just decided that, you know, I can't believe in God. And he's like, okay, honey, how can you not believe? So now he's the one trying to help me understand that there is a God.
Cut off backwards.
Yeah. But then, even through all of his ups and downs and back and forth, he's like, well, if there's stuff that you have questions with, bring it to me. We can talk about it. Yeah. And those ended up in huge arguments because I didn't feel like I had 2 feet to stand on to try to discuss a religious topic with him, because I didn't have as much information as he had. I'd spent nights looking up stuff on the computer, and I actually thought at one point that he was looking at porn or chatting with other girls on the computer.
If only.
Yeah, at one point, because I'm like, I'm done. I'm going to bed. Have fun. I can't stay up late anymore. But when he finally came and told me that I just can't do this anymore, I can't live two sides of the fence. It's one side or the other. I remember I felt like a huge rock hit the bottom of my gut. Yeah. And mind you, I just pretty much given up on reading scriptures or praying anymore, because I just decided that God didn't work for me. It just didn't work the way I thought it was supposed to work. And I just remember that all the kids are off at school. The little one was asleep. I don't think I even told you this. I went in and I thought, I'm one last chance, God. If you really do exist, I'm going to say a prayer and you're going to answer it. or I'm done, I'm walking away because I've just had enough.
Yeah.
And so I knelt down and I said a prayer, and I remember said, please help me know how to help my husband. If it is that he needs to leave the church or to walk away, help me know to be supportive, because if you exist, you'll help me know what choice I need to make. I let it go at that. And later on during the day, I was just messing around with some stuff, and I sat down because I haven't even cracked open a scripture except for maybe to do a primary lesson I had to do. I opened it up and I read something, and it wasn't even valid at the point, but my whole inside had that feeling of, you know what? Support your husband. This is what he needs. And basically that reassuring feeling of like, yep, God exists. You're okay.
Yeah.
And you guys will be okay. Just be supportive. And he needs to leave at this time. And that's what he needs to do. And I talk about having hope that he'll come back. All I want is hope is for him to be happy.
Yes.
And that our relationship is happy and that our family is okay. Yeah. That's the only hope I have. I don't like the sadness that I've seen other directions have gone and ways things have played out for other families in the same predicament.
That's my main hope. I just want, like I've said that so many times to him with tears in my eyes, I just want you to be happy. So if it makes you happy, even if it kills me, go ahead.
Yeah, it's hard. I feel very fortunate that, I don't know, that I'm married to such a wonderful lady that's willing to do that, because, you know, being involved in the ex-Mormon world, more times than not, there's not a form of negotiation that can happen. You know, there's lines that are drawn in the sand, and if you spouse cross this line of unbelief or whatever, then that's it. You know, it's like a conditional marriage, man.
Yeah, and to be fair, I think those of us in the ex-Mormon world draw those lines for our spouses as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it goes both ways.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I've done it a lot, but I know I've, you know, said things or read things and I've gotten really mad and wanted to put my foot down. And
yes, it's been a lot.
Yeah. So
remember, you call it your Saturday night blow up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You'd make it through the week and then
Saturday night would come around and I'd lose my hair.
You had to get ticked about something and bring it up.
Like a weekly thing.
Yeah.
It was about 2 or 3 months. Every Saturday night, something set me off. It was like clockwork. I think I was having menopause or something.
Hot flashes. I would, you know, that's funny. I would think that it would be like a Sunday night, like after all the downloading of church stuff. But
maybe the download of church stuff hit, then he dealt with it. And yeah. To happen, and then he was going to block before he had to start all over again.
Could be.
Yeah.
So Neil, why don't you answer that same question? As you've been going through your process, what have been some of the difficult things as you've seen your wife? Well, in all intents and purposes, stay constant. Has it been frustrating? Have you found, were there times where you were like me, trying to pull your wife to where you're at or seeing her stay? I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. The first thing I did was started reaching the conclusion. And so I started sharing some of sharing the information I was reading with her. And of course, I was doing it in a way that was more like, see what I found, see how you need to be convinced that I'm right and you're wrong.
Well, you were more sly. I mean, you're like, look, this is exciting.
Yeah.
Here, read this. You'll see why I feel this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super exciting.
You'll get it now.
See all these versions of Joseph Smith's first vision?
You'll understand.
Check out how evil Brigham Young was.
Yeah.
Check out this guy.
Yeah, so I mean, I definitely tried to get her to see my way, and you know, I just read the Mountain Meadows Massacre book by Will Bagley, and
oh yeah,
that was tough because I wanted to read it to Naomi, and I just like, no, I better not, because all it would do was get us angry at each other, but. You know,
and maybe it wouldn't have. That was just what we thought.
I don't know. Yeah. But you go through this, and it's like the stuff that you're finding out that is so new and so out there that you never knew, you want to share with your spouse. I mean, I've wanted to share with her my journey and my interpretation of it, but without being told that my interpretation was wrong. So that's where I think we run into problems in our relationship is I'll try and share it with her with the assumption that she'll just see it my way. And then when she doesn't, that's when the fireworks start.
Yeah. And we just barely recently tried to do that. We're like, okay, it's important for me to share these spiritual experiences with you. So I'm going to tell you something that really meant a lot to me. I don't want you to talk back or say, you know, this is why it happened or how stupid it was. I just want you to pretend that you care.
Yeah.
And so
just acknowledge you had a good time.
This was nice and it meant something to you. And he's done that a little bit before, you know, knowing that I won't buy it. And we just kind of go, oh, thanks for sharing.
But you know? What's interesting is like there was a while where I'd share something with you and you'd say, I can see how that might bother you, or I can see how that really bothers you. And honestly, I did not like that any more than being argued with, because I just felt like I was being pandered to.
Oh, see, I didn't know what to say because some of the stuff I'd read and some of the stuff I'd glance at and some of it I was just like, I don't even need to look at this. I know how I already feel. And the stuff I would read didn't hurt my testimony, and a lot of it made it stronger. And so I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to get in an argument, but I didn't want to negate what you were feeling and going through. And I really did, as a debater, see both sides of the argument. And there was a lot of good, logical, solid argument to go on both sides that you could make. And so I didn't know what else to say. Like, yeah, I can see.
Yeah.
And that really bothers you.
I understand that you were saying what was best.
I genuinely felt it. Yeah. I really wasn't trying to just put you off.
I know, but it still bothered me.
Yeah. I mean, because what else is there for me to say? I disagree.
I don't know. That's why I don't share much with you anymore, because it's like I won't, no matter what you say, it won't be the right answer.
It won't be the right answer.
Yeah, well, it reminds me of the times where I was, you know, browbeating you with information, just saying, you know, it's like I would bring her a book and like, read this, you know, read this article, and then you've got to come to the same conclusions that I do. You just have to. I mean, look at it.
It's so obvious.
Yeah, and sometimes she'd be like, you know, like you said, Naomi, where you'd be like, oh, yeah, I get what you're saying there, or yeah, I can see why that's a little troublesome, but sometimes you're like, what's the big deal?
What's the big deal? Okay, I'm glad you're... I'm sorry that upset you. Can I go to bed now?
Yeah.
Yeah. and I'm just like, but you don't get it. You don't understand that this is... You know, this could possibly mean the church is not true.
What did I say to you? I'm like, sometimes you just don't get what I go through in a day.
Yeah.
Unless you actually walk it. So I understand how this upsets you, but you have to understand my opinion is going to be different than what you want to hear.
Yeah.
And I'll acknowledge that it upset you, and I can understand how it probably will, but it's not the same opinion as I'm going
to
have. Yeah.
Well, and even going back to you, Neil, you know, we all want to be validated. We all want to be understood. And that's the key element in all this. Like if we have a picture of a building and we're trying to show it to our spouse or our partner and they're seeing, you know, just the sky or a bird or something like that. And you're like, no, this is a picture of a building. No, all I see is the sky. and there's just a total disconnect there. And it is hard to be like, well, I keep looking at it and this is what it looks like. I don't know why you're seeing something different.
Yeah.
But it really does take work and effort to finally say, okay, well, they just don't see or come to the same conclusions that I do.
Yep.
And I have to find a way to acknowledge and accept that. And once I did that, then it almost seemed easier for her to be like, okay, he stopped being a jerk for a while. I guess I can start to see his perspective a little bit better.
So much easier.
Or actually come around and say, so what did you read now that's interesting? And sometimes like nothing really.
Yeah.
There's a lot of drama going on other places. It's like, okay.
Yeah, there was that time where I finally just stopped, like, bombarding you with stuff. And you were still polite by, yeah, if you still want to do podcasts, that's cool. But I stopped talking to you about it, like, almost cold turkey. And then it was, like, 4 months. And I can't remember if, like, a conference had come by or something like that, and where you had come to me and you said, wow, did you hear about this talk? I mean, it was kind of crazy. And there was some stuff that I don't even agree with. And I was like, really? You know, I kind of pulled my chair up. Please tell me all about it.
Let me turn the microphone on. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, because I can't even explain how frustrating it is to be around somebody that weighed down and frustrated and angry. I mean, that. He wouldn't have to say a word when he walked in the door, and I could see just on his face, on his shoulders, this horrible weight and anger and all the emotions he was going through, and it just hit me, like, right to my heart as if I was feeling it. I had to actually learn how to emotionally build up a wall between us to even be able to sleep by him, which sounds weird. I mean, it was almost like I just was so in tune with his feelings, as a lot of time when you're married, that happens. You can start to read somebody really well, that I had to distance myself enough just to emotionally get through the day, because what he was going through was so overwhelming. Me feeling that on top of what I was going through, I couldn't handle. Like, I couldn't even deal with it. So I'm like, this is his and this is mine. I will let you deal with yours and I'm going to deal with mine, because I can't do both. And so it was really sad because it separated the two of us from being as close as we could have been. But it also kept us from fighting, and it also helped us survive. And in a way, it is healthy to let go and say, I can't be your savior. It's, you know, you're in charge of yourself. I'm in charge of me. And when you do that, it feels a lot more comfortable. But it also was hard because I wasn't as close to you. Did you feel that, Neil?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I was watching our dog walk in and out of the closet.
He's petting her. Oh,
yeah. That's a whole other topic. But there was a space of time for about 9 months when we were roommates.
Yeah,
for lack of a better phrase, you know, roommates with benefits, and that was about the extent of it. I mean, I came home at night, saw the kids, went to bed.
I did laundry.
And yeah.
Just going through the motions, right? Yeah. You guys are just surviving.
Yeah, and it was the lowest point of our marriage. And I mean, it got to a point where we had a conversation of, you know, very calmly, is this do we want to continue in this relationship? Do we still love each other? And I walked away from that conversation thinking, okay, we're done. This is it. We were in the process of buying a house. I called our realtor and said,
you did?
Yeah. And said, we need to put this on hold. And he's like, you really need to reconsider. being a part-time parent of five kids is a little bit of a challenge. Like, because he'd been through a divorce, and he strongly encouraged me to reconsider. And
how did I not know this?
I didn't tell you. Yeah.
I'm so writing him a thank you note.
Yeah. it was a bad day, but you know, we really were on the rocks. I mean, we weren't angry. It's not like we were yelling at each other. Mm-mm. Like a typical, what I would interpret as a typical marriage when you're in that position, just getting mad and screaming. It was more matter of fact.
I just asked him a bunch of questions and he finally answered honestly, even though he knew it would really hurt me.
Yeah.
And how did that go? Was it shocking? I mean, I don't, yeah, walk me through that.
you can share whatever you want.
Are you kidding me?
Well, not everything. The quintessential question was, do you still love me? And my answer was, I don't know.
I don't know. He said, we're just such different people. So there was a lot said that some of it has to do with the church and our beliefs and some of it not so much, although I think it probably stems from that.
It all stems from that.
And our situation of being roommates. But I had to go to church. I knew that I needed it emotionally. If I didn't each week, I didn't make it through the week. Like, I could tell the difference. So I went and spent most of it in the bathroom on the toilet, just crying, like just kind of sitting there crying, you know. And finally, somebody came and asked if I was in there and took me out and talked to me. And they had had a similar experience. And I just shared that out of all the things that he had shared, having you tell me that you weren't sure you loved me was what hurt the worst. And then I don't know what clicked. I just, all of a sudden something turned on and I was like, he loves me. And I started kind of getting frustrated. I'm like, of course he's going to see this. And I started seeing X, Y, and Z of, you know, the things he does and the things that he likes about me and the way that he really wants, the first person he wants to tell about anything is me. When he gets excited, he calls me. When he gets frustrated, he calls me. He doesn't go to anyone else. He doesn't, I don't know, when he needs to laugh or feel better, that's me. And he may not understand what love is right now because he's questioning things, but of course he loves me. And I just kind of had this feeling like, well, he'll realize that. Hopefully it will be by the end of the day so I can sleep tonight.
Yeah, I think
he'll get it.
I went to my church that day.
You did?
Yeah, we went to the NASCAR Hall of Fame to watch a race.
That's right. The Church of NASCAR.
By the way, if your over under is up, we have one tier so far.
Shut the
Oh my gosh. For those at home, cash in your chips. Okay.
Okay, that was really hard to do. That was hard to say and remember. That was like,
oh, you have every right to cry.
The worst day of my life.
Yeah.
Did you emotionally, Naomi, did you feel the same way? Did you still feel like you loved him? Even that's why it was so hard to hear that from him.
Yeah. I had known for a really long time that he didn't know who he was and that he was just kind of going on a journey trying to figure it out. And I would frequently tell him that. It'd be like, when you figured out who you are, let me know. I'm still here. I'm here for you. So I guess when he was telling me all these things, I kind of was at a place where I was like, well, is this what he's going to decide that he is? I really don't think this is who he is. Is it possible that he thinks this is who he is? And so that was kind of like, well, if he is, then yeah, we can't be married. But I wouldn't love somebody that way. That would be too hard. But I believe the core values of Neil, the core Neil that I knew, that's what I loved. I loved the humor. I loved the way that he treated me. I loved the way that we communicated. I loved the feeling that I had when I was around him, you know, back when it was a good relationship, which I believed it was possible to have. So I kind of held to that. So yeah, I guess that was the long answer to, yeah, I think I fundamentally loved the genuine him, but he hadn't been him for at least 2 years. It was a long journey trying to, and it was like, at some point you just are like, okay, I'm back. I'm back now.
And part of it was we had just moved here in August of last year. And so I think the combination of really coming out of the closet, so to speak, and suddenly becoming a full-time dad, which I hadn't been for a long time, it was a massive adjustment to make. And it was difficult emotionally, and you know, I had a lot of learning to do. Naomi was pretty much a rock, but I had to find myself.
Well, emotionally, not physically. I was very ill and going through crap. Yeah. Well, I would say emotionally too, I was a wreck, but I pretended well. That's it till you make it, right?
Oh, I appreciate you guys sharing that, because it is, you know, this is that experience you guys just shared is where most failed marriages end, where they say, okay, that's it. But, you know, you guys have, well, I guess it's a redemptive story where you guys survived it, maybe flourished. Would you say flourished after that?
Yes.
After you recovered?
That was a turning point. It started getting a lot better.
Yeah.
We started going to a counselor every week, which Neil was the one that called and set that up, which meant a lot to me, because I was like, okay, he's in it. He wants to try.
Yeah. And just a quick plug for counseling. I mean, even if your marriage isn't like on the rocks, I think it's still a really good tool. We just went out to eat dinner last night with a couple who said they did counseling, and they said they weren't like in fighting, or they weren't having a bad time, but they just felt like their relationship needed a little bit of a renewal. And they said they went and they flourished as a result of it. So I think counseling, no matter how good you think your relationship is a very valuable tool to take advantage of, especially if your insurance plan will pay for it.
Yeah, because it can get expensive.
It does.
Yeah.
It really helps. But yeah, I, you know, through that process too, though, I looked up articles in the church that were on divorce. And I talked to my sister who had been divorced, and, you know, she told me, you don't want to do it. However hard you think it is right now, it will be a million times harder to not be married and to go through a divorce. And you stay because of your kids. Like, just do it. Like, if that's the only thing that gets you through right now, stay because of your kids. And I was like, that sucks. And then finally, just one article that I read meant a lot to me, and it basically, there was this little part that I interpreted as saying, if there's any sign of life left in a marriage, you try to save it, you know, just like you would a body, a person. If there's any sign that they still might be alive, then you keep working on them. And so that's what I went off of. I said, there's plenty of signs of life here. How silly would it be to walk away? Because I guess I kind of had the mentality at first that you do when you're meeting a person and you're deciding if you're going to marry them. You know, you kind of weigh their list of who they are and pros and cons. And you go, yeah, we would work well together. I like this, this, and this, and not this, and this, and this. But I can live with that. And I was doing that process. And I think you can't just do that process, because you didn't just meet. You aren't deciding to just barely start a life together. You've already had an entire life together. You have this huge history. You've now made a life for yourself that's completely intertwined. You have kids. You have a home. You know, your families are part of each other to some degree. So there's a lot more to consider. It's not just an A and B relationship. It's much bigger and intertwined. So that got me thinking a lot, and I realized I can't think about it the same way. You know, I can't just say, oh, well, he's not the perfect suitor, I'm gonna walk away and date somebody else, you know.
Yeah. And just to build off that, you know, when my wife and I, when we were going through some of the ugly times, and our marriage was obviously strained for a little while, I remember one of the turning points that we had, I remember talking to you about just saying, you know, I love you. It's hard to explain. It's like, I know the church can be wrapped up and mingled in relationships, especially, you know, when there's so much that's riding on church for one spouse or the other, but
and it does affect who you are. I mean, your beliefs, your yeah.
I think it's best put as a friend of mine explained it to me is that she felt that she married her husband for the long haul. They were in it together and they're supposed to grow spiritually together. And when one spouse's beliefs change from where yours are at, you feel a loss, a disconnect. You're like, well, great. What do we have in common? There's nothing that we can do together anymore because we don't have these common grounds.
Right.
And it's a huge eye-opener to realize that, did you really marry the person just because they had the same religious beliefs as you did? Or did you actually marry them because you found things about them that you loved?
Yeah, it's the you're invested in the person, not in the person who fits a, you know, a shell of a some sort of church stereotype that you have.
And it was to take a look at, like, well, what did I fall in love with my husband about? These are the things I love about him. These are the things that are still there about him. And what do we, and where do we go from here to grow together and other aspects? We don't have, we can find things that we're interested in. Our joke is the only thing that we really have in common is our blood type. So if you ever needed a blood donation, you could get it from me.
Possibly but, kidney transplant yeah, too then.
Possibly there too, there yeah. But we've been able to find other things that we can do together or time that he can do something that he enjoys and time for something that I can enjoy and then we get to talk about it.
Right. And that was really hard for me because we met so quickly and it was completely the church, completely the spirit that brought us together and got married. And so it wasn't like we fell in love like you normally would. It was we just knew it was right. And so I had to go through this whole part of my life where I was wondering what is love, because it wasn't what I thought it was, and
right.
And what is it built off of? And I think it's unfair. I think a lot of times Neil tries to, well, he doesn't anymore, but try to say that it doesn't change who you are, that you're still the same person, but it really does, because you're changing your idea of what is right and what is wrong, how you're going to act, how you, think and feel. And so the idea of connecting with somebody that is so different from you in worldviews, in morality even, is really difficult. So being able to say, well, that's all it is, it's just religion, it's not, it encompasses more. It is just one aspect. It's a pretty big aspect of who you are.
It is. It's just like when my wife and I remember going on a few dates after some of our strain and my crisis and all that stuff.
With your wife, right?
with my wife, yes. Thanks for that. I remember feeling like, I don't know, it was very different than when we were first dating. In a lot of ways, because I felt like I was getting to know her on a different level.
Yeah.
And I was letting her know me, because in a lot of ways, like what you said, Naomi, I was a different person in a lot of ways. And I remember thinking, are we still compatible? Or can we still make it work? Are the emotional bonds still there? Do we need to create new ones or different ones or whatever? I don't know. And I remember it was one of the dates we were on or whatever, and she started making me laugh, and then I started making her laugh, and I and we just, I don't know, I was just looking at her and I said, yeah, I love this woman. Yeah. And I just remember thinking, okay, so I think there's a shot, and I just kept hoping, like, okay, I hope she still likes me too.
Well, I have a question for both of you, especially Naomi. Have you noticed from Neil, after years have gone through this change process, there are certain things about his personality that have changed? Not necessarily saying like he's bipolar or something, but like maybe either less tolerant or less patient, or feeling like he's being deceived or lied to when he really is not, or things like that. Because that's things that I've noticed that, when things come up and I'm trying to explain a situation to my husband, he's like, stop lying. I'm not lying. I'm trying to explain to you what's going on. Well, stop smoke screening it. And it, for me, it's like, I'm not smoke screening it, but what it comes down to is he feels like, make sure I get it right. he spent his whole life being told through the LDS religion that hey, this is right, this is wrong. And that's what he believed. And then when everything just kind of blew up or fell apart, he didn't know what was right or wrong anymore.
Right.
And as he was trying to reevaluate where he stand, he kind of went through a phase where he felt like he was always being lied to, or someone was always trying to pull the cover over his eyes.
Yeah, or spinning things. I mean, to a fault, I like things, you know, very direct, very honest.
Yeah.
So I sometimes I take it out on my wife.
I'm still grasping the concept of just directly explaining what I want or what's going on, and then wait for him to ask questions or fill in the rest of the story afterwards.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Neil wasn't like I'm being lied to, but it was all skepticism and everything is intellectual. There are no emotions anymore to consider about decisions, about opinions. And that was weird for me because I include both. And it was weird to have him talk like that because it's so new. But I think a good example of it would be my brother. We went on a trip, my siblings, on the plane. And one of my sisters was unable to get a seat next to the rest of us. And we were kind of chit-chatting before we had to go sit in our seat. And she was holding her baby, you know. And the person noticed that we were chit-chatting. And they said, would you like to trade seats with me? You know, she obviously saw that we were family. And she was like, oh, my gosh, that's so nice. Thank you. I would really appreciate that. And so they traded seats. And my brother said, you realize she wasn't trying to be nice. She was trying to get away from that baby. She doesn't want to sit by your baby. You know, it was always, you just assume the worst. You're very skeptic about anything instead of hoping and dreaming and maybe there is something we don't know, you know, it's just, well, prove it. And it's, you're not that way a lot. And
no.
You were at first, but I notice a difference in the way you communicate. I notice what you get upset with people about is very different. You do seem to get frustrated with people a lot more.
I do?
Yeah.
Oh.
Not us.
Okay.
You're more understanding of us because we've had to work things out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also nice because you're more interested and attentive to things that I'm interested in and trying to find connections. And that's been really nice.
Huh.
Because it's before you have all of these pre-made agreements of what you believe, and so now since we're redefining that, I guess both of us, we get to find out all over again and
fall in love all over again.
It opens up this whole new world, a whole new world. Anyway,
Disney is
too much Disney
popular
at our
in
house.
Our house. Yeah,
yeah, not just yours. Well, let's, I know we're kind of coming up where we should be wrapping it up. For those that are out there listening, not just to this podcast, but to your guys' podcast, whether they start listening to it or they've been listening to it for a while, if you guys could summarize or maybe briefly give some advice to couples out there that are listening or even just one spouse that's living in a similar circumstance, whether they're believing or non-believing, what kind of advice would you give them?
Do you want me to go first, Naomi?
Sure.
Okay. That's a really difficult question because to give the advice of just come out clean to your spouse all at once, I think is what could cause more damage than help. But I would say include if you find yourself where you're starting to question, include your spouse in the journey. Along the way and make sure they're a part of your decision making as much as you can and be patient with them and the more you try and convince them, the worse it can become.
Yeah.
So don't try and force it on them. Just take it easy and let the natural course of events follow.
Yeah. Mine would be don't be too rash. Don't give up right away. You don't know how things will end up. Be willing to see how it plays out, and definitely go to therapy for sure. If your spouse won't go with you, go by yourself, and find a good friend. Find a friend that not only listens to you when you need to just get it all out, but at the end, you know, they validate you, and then at the end, they kind of let you know, okay, but maybe you need to see it from this person's point of view, and you hate them for it, but you need to find the friend that does that and talk. Don't be afraid to talk. And if you have to talk in front of your therapist in order to not get into a fight,
or on a podcast,
or a friend, or, you right. know, I don't care who, you have to communicate. You can't just ignore it.
It won't go away.
It gets worse.
Yeah, I agree and echo those sentiments. I appreciate that. You know, for me, I would say be patient, but also, like, I guess I'm pretty much echoing what you guys said. Be honest. You know, and going back to the whole disingenuous, you know, living a lie kind of thing. If you don't feel like you can be honest, you know, try to shape the atmosphere to where you can. And then, because communication and honesty and just being open with each other is the key. Do you have?
No, I completely agree. It's, if you want it to work, you need to be patient with each other and don't stop talking. Even if you argue, sometimes those arguments, what needs to be said needs to be said, and work from there to fix the problem or to find ways to step forward to find out who each other are and to make your marriage work.
Yeah. And I would say, remember, you married your spouse and not the church.
Exactly.
And like what Kim said on one of the earlier episodes, the mixed faith one that I did, you have to accept and be willing to accept that your wife or your spouse or your partner is not going to change. You have to accept them for who they are right now. You don't hope that they're going to be someone who you want them to be. You know, you accept them for who they are now, and maybe they'll change, maybe they won't. But you have to be willing to accept that.
Yep.
I like that.
Hi, this is Lauren from Concord, North Carolina. And I love to tune out the responsibilities and ridiculous amount of noise my four boys create by listening to the infants. You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com. And if you really like what you hear, give the quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thank you. So, you guys ever want to come on our podcast, let us know. Because
if you're willing.
Oh, yeah, if you're willing.
I should say. Oh. Because it's not like we're jumping for joy.
We are. Well, yeah, we're certainly willing to.
We'd be willing to.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
As long as you're just as courteous to us as we were with you.
We'll see how it turns out after you edit, though.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'll have to change Naomi's voice to some sort of like satanic pitch or something.
Then he said this.
Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.